Coming up on Locked On Dodgers, Rob Manfred talked to the media on Thursday. We're going to talk about some of the stuff he said. We're going to talk about whether spring training is likely to start on time, how many directions phones work in, whether or not owning a ball club is a good investment, and the universal DH. So let's get Locked On Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers. Your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. I am Jeff Snyder of Baseball Essential, and this is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. I'm flying solo today, but Vince should be back with me on Monday. We want to thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. This is the daily podcast covering the Los Angeles Dodgers, bringing you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue. And as I mentioned at the top, Rob Manfred had a lot of things to say on Thursday to the media, his first time talking to the media since the league locked out the players over 2 months ago now, probably 9 weeks or so ago. Manfred had some things to say, and I've got some things to say about the things he said. Let's start with spring training. You know, basically we are just a few days away from when pitchers and catchers would be normally reporting to spring training. And Clayton Kershaw was on the Dan Patrick show and said the other day, he said, "I'm still planning as if we're starting on time, but realistically, there's no way we're starting on time." And that's referring to spring training. Now, that doesn't mean that the season won't start on time, because everybody acknowledges that 6 full weeks of spring training isn't necessarily necessary. They might be able to get by with 4 weeks. So, but it did seem odd that Rob Manfred said on Thursday that as of right now, they are planning on spring training or hoping for spring training to start on time. And I think what this is just a case of Manfred kind of recognizing that whichever side is the first to say spring training is not starting on time, there are some people who are going to blame that side for it happening. Basically, Manfred doesn't want to be the one to say spring training is delayed, because then people will say, "Hey, Rob Manfred, why did you delay spring training?" And well, you know, obviously there are some issues with how the negotiations are going. It's the fact that, you know, there's a lockout going on and they haven't come to an agreement to stop that lockout. That's why spring training is going to be delayed. They are going to be meeting with the players union on Saturday, tomorrow, and MLB will be making a proposal. You know, I guess there's a chance that the proposal will look good and they'll say, "Sweet, we agree. Let's start spring training and everybody get on your airplanes and let's start." Doesn't seem likely. I don't think they're quite close enough to get that across. They are closer than we realized, I guess, at least according to what Manfred said. He did list a couple areas where they are in agreement, and I'm going to talk about those a little bit later. But I still don't think that they're close enough to say that there's any chance of them coming to an agreement tomorrow, this weekend. So the fact is, if they don't come to an agreement tomorrow, and pitchers and catchers were going to report on Monday, it's almost a literal fact that spring training is going to be delayed. And maybe they're just going to play chicken and maybe nobody's even going to mention it. We're not going to say spring training delayed. We're just not going to start spring training. But that's kind of where we're at right now regarding spring training. But I guess, I don't know, I took it as at least kind of a good sign that Manfred didn't want to say it was going to be delayed, even if it is just for petulant reasons. I mean, something about him, I mean, he said a few times that he expects there to be an agreement. He did say that it would be a major failure if games, regular season games, are lost because of this. So he recognizes that. Now, whether that spurs them to action or not is a different thing. One other interesting comment that he made, somebody asked, "Why did you wait 42 days between when you locked the players out and when you first met with them?" And he said, "Phones work both ways." And It's one of those things. It's true. But when you are the side that locked the players out and explicitly said the reason we are doing this is to spur negotiations so we can get this resolved quickly, and then you don't make a phone call, just saying phones work both ways doesn't change the fact that you didn't use the phone in your direction. And I joked on Twitter that he must have gone to the Michael Scott School of Negotiation, where Michael Scott starts a negotiation by saying, "I am declining to speak first," not understanding that the way to not speak first is to just not speak first, not say that you're not going to speak first. Apparently Manfred thinks it's a sign of weakness to call the union and say, "Hey, I like baseball and I would like us to figure this out." Maybe it is. I don't know. It's definitely not Manfred's biggest sign of weakness. He has shown a few signs of weakness along the way. But that whole phones work both ways, it's such a childish answer. That's what really bothers me. I don't talk politics here. And so I'm not going to get into anything political. But one of the things that I did not like about the previous president of the United States has nothing to do with politics, just how childish he is at times. And that's what Rob Manfred reminded me of. Just like, neener, neener, duty head. I wouldn't have been surprised to hear Rob Manfred say the phrase duty head on Thursday. He didn't. So kudos to him for that. But it's a childish thing to say. And, you know, you can make the same point. You know, you can say, the union knew our position and they didn't reach out either. And maybe I should have reached out sooner. I don't know. Maybe anything. The only good answer would be at least acknowledging some responsibility for the fact that they didn't communicate for 6 weeks. And maybe that's not something Rob Manfred was ready to do, accept any responsibility. That would be in keeping with his personality and MO and all of those things. So it is what it is, I guess. But now we know how many directions phones work in. We know that no one's willing to admit yet that spring training won't start on time, even though it won't. So we're going to come back in a minute and talk about whether or not it's a good investment to own a baseball team. I've talked about this some before. Rob Manfred weighed in, and so I'm going to weigh in again in some different words. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and please keep it locked on Dodgers. This is the time of the year that most people have pretty much given up on all their New Year's resolutions, but hopefully, if your resolution was to eat better, you haven't given up on that yet, and hopefully you're using Built Bar to help you along, because Built Bar really helps, because it tastes like a candy bar, but it's healthy like a protein bar. In fact, healthier than any other protein bar, and tastes better. It's ridiculous. And they also make these things called puffs. They're basically little chocolate-covered marshmallow things that are full of protein, and they're delicious, and they're low-calorie, low-carb, just like a Built Bar. And, you know, like everything Built Bar makes, it's covered in 100% real chocolate. It's ridiculous. They're so good, and they're perfect if you need a snack that isn't going to make you feel guilty, isn't going to throw you off on all your fitness goals, because all of them are low-calorie, low sugar, low carb, high protein, high fiber, everything you want, nothing you don't want. And at Built Bar, they're all about the taste. They make it taste delicious first, and then they figure out how to make it healthy. I don't know how they do it, but they do. It's ridiculous. So go to Built.com and use promo code LOCKED15, and you will get 15% off your order. That's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. Hey, it's Super Week brought to you by Get Upside, and there's no better place to get coverage of the big game than on the Locked On NFL podcast. Also, Locked On Bengals and Locked On Rams are in LA all week covering the big game. All right, we are back. We're going to talk a little bit about some more stuff that Rob Manfred had to say. Specifically, I'm going to read this quote that he had to say about whether it's a good investment to own a baseball team. He said, "We actually hired an investment banker, a really good one actually, to look at that very issue. If you look at a purchase price of franchises, the cash that's put in during the period of ownership, and then what they sold for, historically the return on those investments is below what you get in the stock market, which looks like the end of the stock market, was a lot more risky." I don't know what that last part means. But basically Rob Manfred is saying, MLB owners would be better off putting their money in the stock market. Now, I know a good accountant can make numbers say anything, and there's probably a way to make this statement true or seem true, but whatever method that is, we'll probably just focus on sale price. You know, Manfred talks about the cash that's put in during the period of ownership, doesn't mention the cash they get out. And that's the, like, they make a lot of money along the way. Baseball owners, you look at every team is making money. That's the bottom line. And so, yeah, if you look at a team that sells, you know, they bought for this much and they sold for this much. And if you look at it over the course of that time, that's only, you know, whatever percent interest. And maybe you could find a way to make a case that you would have got a higher interest rate on the stock market. I don't even know if there's a way to make that true. But even if it is, that doesn't take into account the fact that they're making tens of millions of dollars every year, worst case scenario. It also doesn't mention the fringe benefits of owning a team, you know, like prestige and fame. Nobody gets to hobnob with celebrities because they own 63 shares of Coca-Cola or Apple. You don't get that from the stock market. Owning a baseball team is a prestige position, and it is extremely lucrative. And also, as Evan Drellick pointed out in his article on The Athletic, this narrative also runs counter to what Manfred himself said about 18 months ago when Steve Cohen was buying the Mets. He said, "I think that the simplest way to understand it is that our teams get valued based on really fundamental economics related to supply and demand. There's 30 of them. Very constricted supply in a country where we're really lucky. You know, tremendous amounts of wealth have been generated in the last two decades. And as a result, there's a lot of demand. It's literally driven by the fact that we have been fortunate, knock on wood. We usually have multiple bidders for a franchise, and who's willing to pay the top dollar for it?" Now, what Rob Manfred said a year and a half ago in an accidental moment of honesty was that it is really good business to buy a baseball team because, you know, when you want to sell it, people will be lining up to buy it and pay you a crap load of money for it. That's what Rob Manfred said when he didn't realize people were listening, and so he accidentally was honest. So now, you know, it's kind of funny that in this same press conference on Thursday, he dismissed all the player criticisms of him as tactical. So everything they're saying is tactical, basically saying they're not being honest. They are saying things for the camera, basically, you know, for public consumption. They're negotiating through social media, blah, 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 blah. He used the word tactical. And yet here he is in this same press conference, lying his tactical backside off about how lucrative it is to own a baseball team. Look, people who get rich enough to own baseball teams, they get that rich, at least in part, by being good with money. So if it was a better investment to put their money in the stock market, you know what they'd do? They'd put their money in the stock market. You know what they don't do? They don't put their money in the stock market. Instead, they buy baseball teams. Stock market is plan B. Plan A is buy a freaking baseball team because that is a cash cow. Everybody knows it. And everybody, every single person listening to Rob Manfred on Thursday looked at him and knew that he was lying. And now, I have a big problem with being lied to. It bothers me to be lied to. It's part of my, you know, I don't talk politics. I'm going to talk politics again. One of my big, my only political principle is I will not vote for someone if I know they have lied to me, which unfortunately rules out most politicians. It also rules out most attorneys. If you're an attorney, I'm sorry, I promise, I believe that you're honest. I know there are good attorneys out there, but, you know, whatever it takes to, every organization needs a good attorney, but being a good attorney is not a qualification to run that organization. Rob Manfred's only qualification to be commissioner of baseball is that he's a good attorney. That's not a qualification. He should not be running baseball because he's not good at running baseball. And unfortunately, he is a part of the profession that a good chunk of the, I'm not going to say even the majority of attorneys, but there is a chunk of attorneys who their job is to lie in a way that can't be proven in a court of law to be a lie. That is what Rob Manfred is good at, or at least what he thinks he's good at. But, and maybe it can't be proven in a court of law, But in a court of public opinion, every person listening to Rob Manfred on Thursday knows he was lying. They know he's being disingenuous at the very best. In the most charitable way of looking at this, Rob Manfred is being disingenuous. Because, like I said, he is contradicting himself. And, yeah, he thinks we're dumb. And you're not dumb, and I'm not dumb. And Rob Manfred thinks we're dumb. He thinks the players are dumb. They're more likely to be dumb than we are because, you know, we went to college. A lot of players didn't. But there's a lot of smart players, too. And they're not going to fall for this. So I don't understand why they are beating the drum about it not being profitable. You know, Dick Monfort doing it a couple weeks ago in their negotiation meeting. Rob Manfred now. Why would you beat this drum that everybody knows is a lie and doesn't serve any purpose anyway? You know, what do you think? That the players are going to say, oh, we feel bad for you that you're not quite getting what you get on the stock market. Okay, we'll take less money. That's not how the world works. That's not how negotiations work. I don't understand even what they intend to get out of beating this drum, even if it was true. And the fact that it's not true just drives me crazy. Don't lie to my face. You got it, Rob Manfred? Don't lie to my face. I didn't watch it. I only listened to it. He didn't lie to my face. He lied to my ears. Don't lie to my ears. Whatever it is, I don't know. Again, I apologize to any attorneys. I did not intend to lump everybody together. I'll tell you, my last company I used to work at, I was an executive in this company, and a new CEO came in whose only qualification was being a good attorney, and he was every bad thing. And so I don't know, the fact that I dealt directly with a person who thought as long as his lie couldn't be proven to be a lie, it wasn't a lie. And then seeing Rob Manfred do the same thing, you know, I get passionate about it. I didn't like that guy. I don't like Rob Manfred. And if you're an attorney and you're listening to this show, I like you a lot. I like all of our listeners. So thank you for listening. And I apologize, and I hope you know I wasn't talking about you, unless you're Rob Manfred. If you're listening, I was talking about you. I don't like you. I think you're a liar. Okay. I'm going to come back in a minute. And one other thing that Rob Manfred talked about was a couple of the things that they have come to an agreement or theoretically come to agreement on. And so I'm going to talk about one of those in particular, the Universal DH. So thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day, and keep it locked on Dodgers. BetOnline has you covered this season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before as football continues its march through the playoffs right to the big game in just a couple days. BetOnline.net remains the best spot for all your sports scores, podcasts, and news this season. And it's not just football. BetOnline has up-to-the-minute info on pro and college hoops, NHL, boxing, UFC, along with live real-time updates of current games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the new amazing offers available for the 2022 season. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, I am back for one last segment. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, Rob Manfred said that they have come to an agreement with the union on three things. I think that he mentioned the Universal DH, the elimination of draft pick compensation in free agency, and I think a draft lottery. I got kind of mixed signals on that. I couldn't totally tell exactly what he was saying, but possibly a draft lottery, which might help with the tanking issue if teams aren't guaranteed a first round pick for losing the most games. I don't like the draft lottery thing. I would much rather have them do a bigger change to the draft order and actually reward teams for trying to win. But that's a different thing. I'm not going to talk about that today. I am going to talk about the Universal DH. That one, there was a lot of passion about that. There's always a lot of passion when we're talking about the Universal DH. There's kind of a sense among National League fans that National League baseball is superior because we don't have the DH. Whether it's, you know, people say that the strategy is better in the National League. Managers have to be better at their jobs. And, you know, in a way, I can see how that is. I don't really buy it. I think there is strategy. It's just different strategy, but not necessarily less strategy in the DH league. And for me, my big issue with the strategy thing is the strategy that there is in the National League is all about how to make the game worse, because the choices you're making are, okay, I have a pitcher who's pitching really well, but his spot is coming up in the lineup and it's a close game. Do I take this really good pitcher out of the game because he can't hit? And who would I hit for him with? I would hit for him with a guy who wasn't good enough to start the game. So he's a better hitter than the pitcher. He's not a great hitter. And I'm going to pinch hit with him, and I'm going to bring in a worse pitcher. Or am I going to let the really bad hitter hit so that the good pitcher can stay in the game? For me, like, that's not strategy that I'm interested in, because that is how do I make this game worse? What I want is for a pitcher to come out of the game when his pitching warrants it. If a pitcher is dealing through seven innings, I don't want him coming out of the game because his spot in the lineup came up. Back in 2005, maybe, Roger Clemens, pitcher for the Astros, had a great season, but he had a ton of no decisions because he got pulled early from games because the games were close and he was pitching in the National League. And that drives me crazy. That was back when the Astros were in the National League. I don't like that. I want a pitcher to get pulled because his pitching says he shouldn't be pitching anymore. Not because his spot in the lineup came up. So even though I understand, I sympathize, because I am a National League fan at heart, on a visceral level, I don't like the DH. But on a whatever level, intellectual level, and even now emotional, like, I don't like watching people do things they're bad at, especially if I paid money for it. If I go to a baseball game, I don't want to watch some crappy hitter swing and miss. I could go down to the Little League field and watch that for free. You know, I want to watch people do things they are world-class at, and pitchers hitting is not it. And the fact is, every pitcher is bad. So, somebody on Twitter was telling me, you know, doing the slippery slope argument, saying, well, if pitchers don't have to hit, well, you know, what about catchers? You know, if catchers are shortstops, you know, and, you know, that it's the argument you get all the time that eventually you're just going to have 9 defensive players and 9 offensive players. And my response to that is, A, the DH has been around for 50 years and we're just getting around to putting it in the other league. I don't think this slope is very slippery. I don't think we're in danger of say, oh yeah, and let's get rid of all the other guys who struggle at hitting too and let them have a DH too. Nobody is suggesting that. Nobody ever has, except as a straw man in this DH argument. And the fact is, it's a different type of bad. Like, even backup shortstops in the 80s who were only in the league because they were good defensively, they were all better hitters than every pitcher. That's just, you know, the thing is, the skills that it takes to be a great pitcher are totally different than the skills it takes to be a great hitter. And it's very rare that they actually happen in the same person. You know, there's growing up, yeah, being a good athlete will get you a long way. And so there's a lot of pitchers who were good hitters in high school or even in college, less often in college, but sometimes. But the fact is, all of them eventually choose one or the other, because in order to be good enough at pitching in the major leagues or good enough at hitting in the major leagues to warrant being in the major leagues, it's a full-time job. And you cannot do 2 full-time jobs at once. And so, you know, Babe Ruth started as a pitcher. When they realized he's a great hitter, they had him stop pitching because they knew he can't be great at both. Shohei Ohtani right now is great at hitting and good at pitching. I will be shocked if 4 years from now, Shohei Ohtani is still both hitting and pitching. He's either going to make a choice or his elbow is going to make the choice for him. And if I'm wrong about that, that brings the grand total of pitchers who were good hitters, or people who were very good at pitching and very good at hitting, to 1. Shohei Ohtani would be the first. That Shohei Ohtani, we can all agree, is a freak. And so it's not realistic to say, well, who's a pitcher? Walker Buehler could be as good as Shohei Ohtani at hitting if he just put in the effort. Just a little go get him attitude. Come on, Walker, hit the batting cages. It's not going to happen. Walker Buehler is a great pitcher, and that skill set has nothing to do with hitting. He's a good athlete. He's a big, strong guy. Sometimes he gets a hold of one. He hit a home run against the Cardinals a couple of years ago. But he is never going to be a good hitter. Know why? Know how I know that? Because he's a world-class pitcher. And world-class pitchers are never good hitters. You want to know how many pitchers there have been in the live ball era, that's since 1920, in the National and American Leagues, pitchers who were good pitchers and at least average hitters, league average hitters? One, Wes Farrell, the only one. Wes Farrell had a 100 career OPS plus. That means he was exactly league average and he was a good pitcher. Wes Farrell should be in the Hall of Fame. Instead, his brother is. His brother's not as good as him. Rick Farrell was not as good as Wes Farrell, but he made the Hall of Fame. Wes didn't. He is the only one. Every pitcher you're thinking of to argue with me right now is a bad hitter. Every single one of them. Or a bad pitcher. Micah Owings is the other pitcher who has been above average. There's only two pitchers who have been even average hitters. Wes Farrell, Micah Owings. Micah Owings didn't last in the league because he was bad at pitching. Everybody else. Who do you want to say? Madison Bumgarner? Let's see. Madison Bumgarner. Career OPS plus 44. He is 56% worse than league average at hitting in his career. Who else you want to say? Jacob DeGrom, right? Jacob DeGrom's a great hitter. We've all seen it. Career OPS plus 35. He is 65% worse than league average. Omar Vizquel, who is a very good defensive player and isn't going to get in the Hall of Fame, partly because he's a wife beater and partly because he was a terrible hitter. He was a lot better at hitting than any of these pitchers we're going to mention. Who else? Zach Greinke, right? Zach Greinke's a really good hitter. Let's see. Zach Greinke, career OPS plus 60. 40% worse than league average. All these guys. Germán Márquez, Rockies fans love to talk about Germán Márquez being a great hitter. 41. 59% worse than league average. Who else you want? Let's see. Any other names that jump out at me? Adam Wainwright. Adam Wainwright was like complaining about the DH coming because he loves to hit. He's got like 10 career home runs and stuff. Career OPS plus 37, 63% worse than league average. Everybody you're thinking of is bad. Even some of the old ones, that, you know, this is all recent ones, but you say, well, back in the day, Don Drysdale could hit. You know what? Don Drysdale? Let's see. Career OPS plus 45. Bob Gibson was a very good hitter for a pitcher. Career OPS plus 50. The list goes on. I'm telling you, none of them. Don Larson, I'm seeing an 81. That's like the highest I'm seeing here among any of these guys. They are Tim Lawler, who had an 87 OPS plus. Guess what? Tim Lawler, you never heard of him because he couldn't pitch. That's the thing. Pitchers can't hit. Bottom line, and they will never be able to. You go back as far as you want to in baseball history, back when men were men and pitchers took pride in their hitting, they still sucked at hitting. It's never going to change because the skill sets are not the same. It's like saying, well, this guy should be able to make a good souffle because I watched him put a roof on a house. They're totally different skills. And the fact that they wear the same baseball uniform doesn't mean that they are similar at all. And so the DH is coming, and that's good. It's kind of surprising that they've agreed to it since both sides want it. And one thing we've learned in the last couple of years is that even things that both sides want, it's hard to get an agreement between the two sides. But they've apparently agreed on that, and that's a good thing, partly because it's good for the Dodgers. We'll talk more probably next week about what this might mean for the Dodgers now that we do know that it's going to be coming. But we've talked about it some already because we've known for a while it's coming. It's been a foregone conclusion, but now it's at least semi-official, so we'll probably talk more about that. But yeah, that's my thoughts on the DH. Pitchers can't hit. They'll never be able to, so stop making them try. Oh, and the one last thing. People say that players should have to play both sides of the ball. How come you have pitcher? Everybody has to hit except the pitchers. Well, what I want to know is how come everybody has to pitch except the position players? How come Cody Bellinger doesn't have to pitch once in a while? What happened to well-rounded players? If he just apply himself, he could pitch. See, it sounds dumb going the other way, huh? Yeah, it does. All right, that's going to do it for today. We mentioned a couple days ago that we'll be having Keith Law on to talk about his Dodgers prospect list. That's going to happen next week. We still haven't locked down a time, but Keith did get back to me and told me this week he's pretty busy, gets a lot of demand around this time. And so we're going to get that to you next week sometime. Not sure which day yet, but you got that to look forward to. We'll make sure to let you know when that's happening. And beyond that, you know, hopefully we'll have some news to report from this negotiation session that's happening tomorrow. Either way, Vince and I will be here with you on Monday to talk about it. I guess it might just be me, since the big game, whose name I'm not allowed to say, is happening on Sunday. And Vince is more likely than me to be in a state that is not conducive to podcasting after that game. We'll see. But one or both of us will be here on Monday to talk about whatever there is to talk about. So thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. We truly appreciate it. And I hope for your next listen, your second listen today, you will check out Locked On Bets, your daily one-stop shop for all your gambling needs. Locked On Bets, hosted by your boy Q, with expert analysis and insight from Lee Sterling. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. If you're not listening to or watching Locked On Dodgers every day, we would love if you would add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who you think might like the show, please tell them about it. We would love for you to share it on social media. We love seeing tweets about the show. We're not great at publicizing ourselves, but we are really good at hit and retweet. If there's something, if you want to tweet out a quote from an episode and tag us in it, we will retweet the heck out of that. We would love to have you help us publicize this show. We think we put on a good show for you guys, and we hope you enjoy it and hope that other people will too. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I'm on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. Our email address is lockedondodgers@gmail.com, and our phone number for voicemails or texts is 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree, you just have to listen. We'll talk to you on Monday.